This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, here on this late May Wednesday as we get closer and closer to the start of the college football season. We are less than 100 days away, as we have actually passed the part of 100 days from the start of the NFL season. So we're getting close to the start of the college football season, and we're going to continue to get you guys ready. Looking forward to today. We're not going to have a big open because Brad Powers, professional handicapper, is going to jump on the podcast, and we are going to chop it up for almost an hour. So no real need to open up the show and talk at length. I am looking forward to a podcast later this week. I've referenced it a couple of times, and if you've tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line, which you should, weekdays 10 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, I did take a look at the David Hale article of Tiers of Quarterbacks on ESPN.com. And, you know, if you've listened to this podcast for the past month as we've been back here in the offseason, I'm fascinated by the quarterbacks this year in college football. And David Hale's going to jump on the podcast on Thursday. So looking forward to chopping up with him and looking at some of the data he pulled when it came to the college football quarterbacks heading into this upcoming year. But like I said, quick open. As just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe as we get into the summer months. Hopefully we will be part of your soundtrack this summer, getting you ready for the college football season. You can always tweet me. I'm at 1TimMurray, and please hit us with that five-star review. I do see you guys. I appreciate the suggestions, and I'm going to go start trying to book some of those guests that you have suggested that you'd like to hear from. And some of them are new names to me, so certainly want to hear their perspective. But if you leave us a five-star review, hit us with a guest that you'd like to hear from, I will do my best to get them on the podcast, maybe even starting as early as next week. But let's take a quick break here, very quick open, and then we will talk to Brad Powers. I'll wrap up the podcast with a couple thoughts, not really gambling related, regarding possible college football expansion and hopefully normal minds and common sense prevails, but that doesn't tend to always be the case when it comes to college football. All right, quick break. When we come back, Brad Powers will join the podcast and we will run through all Power Four conferences, best bets. Looking forward to that conversation. It's up next right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, excited to welcome back to the podcast friend of mine, and you catch him all throughout the football season on VSiN, VSiN Primetime. He's everywhere talking college football, and it's always good as we get closer to these announcements of game times. You're starting to feel like the college football season is right around the corner. I know a man who has done the prep work already. Brad Powers joins us right now. Of course, at Brad Powers 7 is where you can find him on social media, and that can lead you to all of his doings throughout the offseason. Mr. Powers, a little change of scenery for you, as I saw via social media. How are things here this offseason?
Yeah, busy. Personally, you know, making a cross-country move is not the easiest thing to do, but we are moved. We're not totally situated yet. There's still some setting up to do, but this is one of my first shows I've done since I made the move to the big old OHIO. So looking forward to it. No other person I'd rather talk ball with.
Behind enemy lines, man. I don't know. Are you going to be all right? I know you had to grow up in Ohio being a Notre Dame fan. So, fresh off of a loss in the national championship, man, risky proposition there by you.
Yeah, I'm close to the Indiana border, and I'm in a very Catholic-oriented county. So there's quite a few Notre Dame fans here. So I did my due diligence to make sure I wasn't completely, behind enemy territory there in Columbus.
All right, let's get it out of the way, because it's funny. I don't think I've talked Notre Dame this offseason here on this podcast, but I'm sure the moment I bring it up, oh, Homer, talking Notre Dame. But we got to talk about a team as a preseason top 10 team and went to the national championship a year ago. So you were at the spring game for the Irish. You went to a number of spring games, I saw. And, you know, right now you look at the win total, 10.5, depending on where you look. Opener against Miami, Labor Day weekend, right now a 2.5-point favorite. And what's interesting to note is the differences I saw in the futures market, Brad. DraftKings is 12-1 for them to win the title, which seems pretty short. Circa's 17-1. And then the Westgate Superbook is 30-1. So what is your outlook on the Irish coming off of a incredible season just a year ago?
Yeah, I mean, for starters, I mean, a lot of people are going to consider that being a dream run for them. And in a lot of aspects, it was. I mean, this is a program that hadn't won a major postseason game in 30 years, and they won three of them last year, and, you know, en route to the national championship game appearance. But it could have been better. It's not like they won six or seven games by, you know, 7 points or less. It's not like they had incredible injury luck. In fact, it was bad luck. 6-7 starters out for the year. I mean, had they been healthy, completely healthy, do they beat Ohio State? I don't know. I'm not sure. But, man, that would have been a, you know, certainly I wouldn't expect them to fall behind 31-7 if Notre Dame was actually healthy in that game. But if they have better injury luck this season, boy, I could see them right back in the mix because, I mean, I think the offensive line certainly, provided they stay healthy, one of the best in the country. I think they have the best running back in the country in Jeremiah Love. They're loaded behind him. I'm shocked that no one else behind Jeremiah Love transferred. So they're right there with Penn State as far as the best running back unit in the country. Wide receivers should be better than what they've had the last 5-6 years, thanks to, I think, an underrated transfer portal and move and getting Malachi Fields from Virginia. We'll see if he shakes out. And obviously, Jaden Greathouse really proved himself in the last two games against Penn State and Ohio State. Defensively, there's some issues, maybe, or at least some, I don't know if issues, but I think they do take a, you know, a little bit of a downturn at defensive tackle, but it's not like Howard Cross and Riley Mills were completely healthy last year. I think they'll, provided that their defensive ends are healthier, I think they'll be better there. Linebackers are young. They'll miss Jack Kaiser, but they're as talented as any linebacker unit in the country as far as the young guys. Secondary, you're going to miss Xavier Watts, of course, but boy, I think they have the best cornerback in the country in Leonard Moore. I like Shuler quite a bit, the other safety spot, who really played well opposite Watts. So, I mean, add it all up. I mean, I said this coming into last year. It's the deepest, most talented roster Notre Dame's had in three decades, and I think this year's roster is a little bit better than last year. I purposely have not mentioned the all-important position, CJ Carr at quarterback. I think is as talented as they've had as far as a prospect, probably since Jimmy Clausen. But they're certainly, in my opinion, they'll miss Riley Leonard in the quarterback run game. I mean, those are just, you know, if it's third and short, fourth and short, they picked up first downs. But I do think there's an ability to be better in the passing attack with CJ Carr. I'm pretty high on him. So you add it all up. I guess, you know, it took me 90 seconds to 2 minutes to get to the fact that if I were to make one future bet right now, as far as national championship future bet, 30-1 Notre Dame at Westgate would be that bet I make. And I'm not a homer, although I've gotten a lot more, you know me, gotten a lot more optimistic the last 2 years than what I was the previous 6-7 years you and I talked.
Well, just wait until they're struggling against, you know, Texas A&M week 3. And I'm sure you and I will
forget be texting. It could be the first series on the road against Miami. It's been a house of horrors for them.
Yeah, I'm terrified. I'll be there. So the last time I was there was great. So hopefully a similar result as to what we saw there with a game-winning field goal against Penn State. One final thought on Notre Dame, because we got a lot to get to nationwide. What do you make of the loss of Al Golden? You and I just, you know, I think before it was cool, before everyone said that Al Golden was this awesome defensive coordinator, you could see it in year one, even though they had some issues in the red zone. So he has 3 years in South Bend. He's phenomenal. He wins the Broyles Award. He moves on to be the defensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals. And now they go to get Chris Ash, who once upon a time was a rising superstar, you know, in the business, was the head coach at Rutgers, DC at Texas. But after the Rutgers run, it was not ideal. So what do you make of the Chris Ash move at defensive coordinator for Notre Dame?
Yeah, I certainly think it's a downgrade, although I don't think it's a big downgrade just because the rest of the defensive staff's there. Last I checked, Marcus Freeman, defensive-minded coach. Yep. Mike Mickens is by far, in my opinion, the best defensive back coach in the country. I think Max Bulla, their linebacker coach, is one of the rising stars. Be a defensive coordinator soon, in my opinion. They got continuity with Al Washington on the defensive front. I just think there's so much, you know, besides the change of coordinator, all the other pieces are there, and they got, you know, a lot of guys coming back that are experienced. So it'll be a downgrade just because I thought Al Golden was a top 2-3 defensive coordinator in college football, even though a lot of people didn't feel that way. But I don't think it's a major issue. I thought all the press conferences and all the media appearances that Chris Ash made this spring, I thought he answered if there were some questions out there. Now, with all that being said, we'll see. I mean, against Miami in a high-powered offense right away, I mean, he'll have to hit the ground running.
What do you make of Miami? We've talked about him a little bit, and, you know, I don't know. I did a segment, and we're going to talk to David Hale tomorrow on the podcast, and he did his tiers quarterback. And I thought he had some interesting nuggets in his article, kind of doing the blind resume of Carson Beck, and maybe the perception is a little bit down on him when the numbers don't necessarily equate to that. So Miami is always going to be busy in the portal. We obviously know about the questions they've got at the head coaching position. And look, the fact of the matter is they lose Cam Ward, who ended up being the number one overall pick. So Miami's a 2.5-point underdog week one against the Irish. This is a team that, you know, you look at their win total right now, they're sitting at around, you know, 9, 9.5, depending on the book. So where are you right now on the Canes heading into 2025?
Yeah, current pricing, I'm a little indifferent. I was a buyer early, and you know me, I'm betting right away. I took a little over 8.5 on the win total, took a little 3.5 in that week one game. Although I was just getting above a key number, obviously. I think the roster, generally speaking, is the best Miami's had in quite some time, as far as the talent and depth aspect. But you hit a couple of nails on the head. Number one, there's a major concern at coach. There's this. I mean, I don't think much of Mario Cristobal. As far as X's and O's and making good decisions when the game's on the line. So that's always there. I do like their new defensive coordinator. I think they'll be improved on that side of the ball. It has to be better. Yeah. That's the reason why they didn't make the playoffs last year, particularly pass defense. They're very active in the portal on the secondary. They basically rebuilt their entire secondary through the portal. But obviously, I think it's going to come down to the quarterback. I'm kind of conflicted on Carson Beck. I mean, this is a guy that came into last year, was the Heisman favorite, gets an injury, significant injury in my opinion, and that's the major question mark. How healthy is he going to be? They're saying all the right things, but he did not participate in the spring. So a new team, didn't participate in the spring. Will he get enough reps to get acclimated? We'll see. I mean, obviously Notre Dame's defense is going to give him a hell of a test early. When it boils down to me, where I have a little bit concerns, Georgia didn't try, in my opinion, from the outside looking in, they didn't try their best to hold on to Carson Beck. So mm-hmm. That always concerns me when they didn't get into a bidding war with Miami as far as keeping Carson Beck. So I think, you know, there's certainly Clemson's the favorite in the ACC, but if we're going off of, you know, who's that second team in line? It'd be Miami for me. And we're going to find out. I mean, that week one game, Ohio State, Texas is the headliner. But my goodness, Notre Dame, Miami, and LSU, Clemson, I can make a case that those games are more important because I think the winners of those games could really make a run this season.
Yeah, it is. It's an awesome week one. And we've talked about it a bunch here. You know, having a true home game for Miami, we know that it could be a sleepy atmosphere when Duke comes to town. But yeah. If you saw 2017, Brad, yeah. It was a hornet's nest there. It was a raucous environment.
Marcus Freeman will have the team more ready to play than Brian Kelly ever did. I can tell you that.
And I can say one thing, you know, last year we were curious how they would acclimate, obviously, to a trip to College Station, and they did just fine there with that spot. So let's stick with the ACC. Miami and Clemson are the favorites. We've talked so much about Clemson this offseason. I feel like we're becoming a Clemson podcast, but I got to get your thoughts on Clemson. I do have a little bit of a taste of Clemson to win the ACC at plus 160. That's been on the move all offseason. There are some shops that are around even money. We've seen their futures move from like 20 to 1 down to 16 or 14 to 1. They're the number one team in returning production, according to SP Plus. I'm curious your thoughts on this Clemson team. Win total sits at 9.5, various juice to the over. Where are you on Dabo's squad heading into this year?
Yeah, I'm a buyer, an early buyer, whether it be the win total over 9.5, if it was plus money when that started. As far as the over, I think they'll be favored in all 12 games. Bet them in week one against LSU when that line was below 3. I think they're the better team and at home. So you got my thoughts there. I'd still lean at -3, Clemson that one. But I also took part in the move as far as the conference futures. Probably my favorite conference futures bet I made was Clemson to win the ACC. Still think there's some slight value there, even though it's moved significantly from where I bet it a few months ago. I just think they're about a touchdown better than anybody else in the ACC. Kate Klubnik started to show some things, consistency for me in the passing game at the end of last year. All their top wide receivers come back. They've recruited the position well. They're still young there, but my goodness, they're as talented as they've been in the last 4 or 5 years at wide receiver. Boy, defensive front brings a lot back. You mentioned number one in the country in returning production. When a lot of teams at the top of college football lost a hell of a lot, there's a lot of continuity there. Continuity, for me, on offense helps. I like Tom Allen as the new defensive coordinator. I think that's an upgrade. Add it all up, and this is they've been an ACC contender and obviously have had their way with that conference, but they haven't been a national title contender since, you know, Trevor Lawrence's final season there in 2020. This is the first time since that year that Clemson's capable of not only making the playoffs, but winning multiple games in the playoffs. So I am a buyer of Clemson, although it's starting to, you know, word's getting out thanks to you and everybody else that I don't know if that value is as good as it's been, but it's, there's still some slight value there.
Yeah, no doubt. And it moved quick, and, you know, early bird gets the worm sometimes, and you're the earliest of the birds usually to that market, Brad. All right. I have not talked a lot North Carolina here on this podcast because I just don't know what to expect. And, you know, obviously the Jordan Hudson stuff is kind of funny when you look at it. But, you know, we don't care about that nonsense unless it's going to affect the on-field play, which maybe it will. How do you go about pricing this North Carolina team? Is it comparable, Brad, to what we saw a couple of years ago with Colorado with all the pomp and circumstance coming in? It feels like it's a little bit healthier bones down there in North Carolina. And obviously, Bill Belichick's coaching chops a little bit better than what Coach Prime was, considering he's the, you know, greatest NFL coach of all time. So what have you done with North Carolina as their win total sits at 7.5 right now?
I'm skeptical. I've been pessimistic, so I have bet under 7.5. It's still holding value, so there's a lot of disagreement. It's the one where there's some disagreement there. I bet TCU against North Carolina in the week one game, so it comes down to this for me, a multitude of things. Number one, man, for a long time, the whole Belichick versus Brady, who should get the most credit? I was team Belichick for a long time, until I wasn't. I think it became crystal clear who was behind that. So, I mean, we have 200 games, sample size, and what, 10 plus seasons. And the reality is Belichick was a below 500 coach in the NFL without Tom Brady behind center. And you're talking a guy that's 70 plus years old, coming to college for the first time. I'm not wild about, the support staff that he has around him, whether it be assistant coaches or anybody associated with it. I don't like that you're going out to get your starting quarterback, or at least perceived to be your starting quarterback post-spring. I don't like the off-field issues because, I mean, you're talking about a guy that his whole mantra, his whole career has been no days off, and I see pictures of him doing a cartwheel or whatever that the thing is on the beach with his 20-year-old girlfriend. I don't like it. So I'm just pessimistic on North Carolina. Schedule is easy. There's a lot of swing games, starting with that opening Labor Day night game. But again, you want to talk about holding value. I think TCU should be favored over them in that opener. And still there's a plus sign next to TCU. So TCU for me, under 7.5 for me. I maybe I'm getting more you know, sky, I wouldn't say sky is falling, but a little bit skeptical more in my old age. But I really question a guy that has been exposed as far as being a GM building a roster besides Brady. And without Brady, a below 500 coach, and, you know, doing something for the first time in his career. And I don't know if he's all in. You know, Mr. No Days Off doesn't seem like he's all into this. This just feels like he's maybe setting up his son to be the next head coach or something. You got to be all in. You can't half-ass it.
It's been very bizarre, especially from him, right? And the guy that is, as you said, no nonsense the whole way through in Foxborough. Look, I would love to just run through all the Power Four teams with you. We don't have all that time, right? So I'll do this. We'll sum up the ACC this way. Give me a team that you're bullish on and a team that you're skeptical on if you remove UNC.
Virginia Tech has some injuries at quarterback. Both their top guys were hurt in the spring. Brent Pry is a guy that, I mean, nobody in the entire country has a worse win-loss record in close games than him the last couple of years. So that was a win total I bet under. Numbers don't like Louisville, but be careful, Louisville. I think Miller Moss at quarterback in Brom's system, that's a team nobody's really talking about. I haven't bet over 8.5, but they're a team that can, in my opinion, can make a run. NC State, I like their quarterback a little bit. Getting him back, I think they'll be much improved this year. And I think Syracuse takes the win total says it, though. They won 10 games in hell. There was a couple markets that opened them 4.5 win total. So in that regard, the market's, you know, much sharper. I'll give you another team. I mean, you asked me not to go through every team, but Virginia might be a team that I think this is. I'm not a big Tony Elliott guy, but they have went all in as far as the transfer portal. This has to be a bowl game, a bowl for them, or he's getting fired. And I think they do make a bowl game.
Yeah, right now, look around. I think Circa sitting at 6-10 both ways if you do like the Wahoo Wahs there. So 6 wins would get you a push and hopefully more than that. All right, let's go to your neck of the woods. You now live in Ohio, O-H-I-O. So let's go to the defending champions. And, you know, one of the themes that I've been talking about really this month, Brad, since I sparked the podcast back up, is just I think this year from a quarterback standpoint is going to be wildly fascinating because the big boys, your Notre Dames, your Ohio States, your Alabamas, your Georgias have questions at quarterback, your Oregons. And then you've got some, you know, veteran quarterbacks coming back at maybe, you know, a little bit lower of a tier. So looking at Ohio State, you mentioned the season opener. Doesn't get much better than Ohio State in Texas. Right now, I believe the number sitting at 3 in favor of the Buckeyes. Win total 10.5 is juiced under. Do we see a step back from Ohio State? And, you know, something that I don't know has been talked about maybe enough is that they lost both coordinators as well heading into this year.
Yeah, I mean, two great coordinators, in my opinion. Still, the talent level is so much better than everybody else in the Big Ten for how they've recruited. I think Julian Sain will be all right at quarterback. I don't think it's that big of a downgrade, obviously, from experience, but certainly not skill level from Howard. Last I checked, you can make a case that they have the best offensive player in college football coming back, Jeremiah Smith, at wide receiver. You can also make a case that Ohio State has the best defensive player in the country coming back and Downs at safety. Yeah. So, you know, even though they lost a ton to the NFL draft, I mean, it's still one of the more talented rosters in the country. I would be way more negative on Ohio State. The problem is their two toughest games, you know, Texas and Penn State, but they get them both at home. So, I mean, I still have Ohio State favored in those two games. Even though Michigan's beaten them 4 straight years, I still have Ohio State favored in that game. So right now I'm a projected favorite in all 12 games. Doesn't mean I think they're going to go 12-0. I think probably 10-2 is much more likely. But I haven't done anything with their win total too much. So I'm kind of indifferent. They're certainly not going to be as good as last year. But I don't think it's weird because – you know, some of the preseason magazines are coming out and they have Texas and Penn State like 1-2. And they both lost to Ohio State last year and they both have to travel to Columbus. So I'm not in that line of thinking, I can tell you that.
Well, let's get to Penn State because they made one of the biggest splashes this offseason in going out and pulling Jim Knowles from Ohio State to be their defensive coordinator. And a year ago, they made a big splash in getting Andy Koltunicki to be their offensive coordinator. Drew Aller is back. That the running back room is back with Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton. Now, they did lose Abdul Carter, you know, second overall pick, and they lost Tyler Warren, who is their everything offensive weapon there. So Penn State, a team that a lot of people bullish on, they host Oregon off a bye week in late September. As you mentioned, they go to Ohio State in early November. That is also off a bye week. To get Indiana at home, could be an interesting one there. Win total, depending on where you look, either 10.5 or 10. DraftKings is 10.5 juiced under, and Circa was 10 juiced over. Are you buying Penn State this year? And I don't call it a make or break year, but you know, at some point, you know, the crowd continues to get loud, right, around old Jimmy Big Game Franklin if he doesn't win some of these, you know, top five, top 10 games.
A little indifferent. I mean, I did bet him to win the Big Ten at 4-1, which I just thought was, you know, a bad price. You give me a bad price, I'll bet it. So, and that's more in that plus 270 range ish now across the market. Other than that, I haven't touched the win total because of the, you know, the inability to win those two big games. And he's got two of them, one being on the road at Ohio State. Not wild about James Franklin. Thought he got out coached yet again by Marcus Freeman and the other big games last year. Not a big fan of the quarterback. I thought he was as bad as he got against Notre Dame. I mean, he's single-handedly the reason is the reason they lost the Notre Dame game. And I'm not just talking the interception at the end. I mean, he was atrocious. And you can also make a case that who was their best offensive player last year? Tyler Warren, their tight end. Well, he's gone. Who was their best defensive player last year at Penn State? Well, Abdul Carter, he's gone. So for a team that's getting talked up about getting some preseason number one, number two love, guy can't win a big game. They got two big games. You lost your best offensive player, your best defensive player. I mean, it's there. I mean, this is the year to make the run, but they just, I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. So I still think there's more questions than answers right now, even though I like the roster. Allen is Singleton at running back. I like the offensive line. I like the defensive coordinator change. They'll be fine there, but I don't know. They're still in improvement mode for me.
Oregon goes undefeated in the regular season and then gets smoked in the Rose Bowl, and they might be the happiest of any program out there that we are moving away from the previous seeding situation and moving to straight seeding here in 2025. So, when you look at the Ducks this year, another question at quarterback, obviously a highly touted prospect coming out of high school was Dante Moore, went to UCLA, and then last year was in Oregon backing up Dylan Gabriel. They do have a road trip to Penn State. They do not have to play Ohio State. They do not have to play Michigan. They get Indiana at home in October off of a bye. They go to Iowa. So, you know, Not a crazy daunting schedule. The non-con is pretty manageable as you look at it. So high win total here again. Oregon sitting at 10.5 at a number of shops, and the cheapest juice, I believe, over on any of the teams out there. So the expectation is for Oregon not to have a big drop-off. Maybe it's schedule related. What do you see with the Ducks here in 2025?
Yeah, I think certainly not as good as last year's team, not as deep as last year's team, and then not as experienced, only two returning starters on offense. But schedule, like you mentioned, sets up nicely where I haven't done anything with the win total. I would lean under 10.5 if I was forced to bet. And we get closer to the season, maybe I'll eventually make that bet. They were one of the very few teams I was able to watch a spring game, thankfully. I didn't see it, man. I mean, Dante Moore didn't wow me in that game. And you know, it's just one practice, but I've watched spring games for the last 30 years. Sometimes it just clicks, and I didn't see it there. Dan Lanning's been great, but I still think he's got to prove himself a little bit in some of the bigger games. You know, Kalen DeBoer got the better of him for 2 years, and you know, when push came to shove, in the second go around the Buckeye game, got absolutely throttled. I mean, it wasn't even close, 34-0 in the second quarter. So, I think they're a playoff team. There's a difference between being a playoff team and a team capable of winning 2-3 games in the playoffs. And I think they're more of just being a playoff team, not a team that I'm expecting to make a deep run at this point. Recruiting's been great. They didn't necessarily go out. That tells me the roster has been built here the last 3-4 years. The fact they didn't go out and get 20 transfers says a lot that they believe in their roster and their recruiting and their development. But, boy, watching their spring, I didn't see it particularly on offense, the difference makers there that'll get them over the top.
So last year, I, you know, pretty decent year from a win total standpoint. Didn't have nearly as many as you did, Brad, but there was no win total easier than Indiana over 5.5 as they go 11-1. So a little bit of a market adjustment. It now sits at 8.5. The schedule is not nearly as favorable. They have to play Oregon. They have to play Penn State. Illinois is going to be a pretty good team. The non-conference, as to quote you, is a lot of tomato cans, Old Dominion, Kennesaw State, Indiana State. But we got some pressure now on old Google me there, Cignetti. But they go out to the transfer portal. They get Fernando Mendoza. They were busy in the portal. They added an offensive lineman from Notre Dame and Pat Coogan, who was a starter during their playoff run. What are we thinking of Indiana heading into 2025?
Yeah, typically a team off an historical high and got a lot of favorable, setup as far as schedule. You would say that's an automatic under for the following season, easy under. We want to race the window to bet it. Haven't bet it yet, though. Even though I would still lean under 8.5, it's not a slam dunk as far as I'm concerned. I like what they did in the portal again. I mean, clearly, whoever is responsible for that as far as scouting, NIL, getting the right players in there, man, there's another sneaky good portal that they can identify who's good in college football. They go out and get them yet again. They also retain a little bit more than I expected. Key guys at wide receiver, leading receiver back, some key guys on defense at all three levels come back for them. So they're a little bit more experienced than what I was anticipating. But I certainly don't think they're going back to where they're not going to be 11-1 good, but they're certainly not going back to being, not a bowl team. I mean, they're right there. I think they're pretty much appropriately priced. So we'll see. The old Cignetti, Google me, probably was a little too cocky entering the Notre Dame game. And thankfully I was in attendance for him to get a little bit, something served his way. I was happy with that, but I do think he's a great coach. And I don't think this is an Indiana program that's going to all of a sudden fall flat right back on their face. I think they're going to be a consistent winner as long as he's there.
Yeah, I enjoyed that quite a bit. Opened the show the night after, the day after on VSIN, giving Cignetti just a little tough love. But no, I ultimately, as much as I like to poke fun, the dude is a very good coach, and I would agree. I think the expectations should be high again for Indiana. All right, let's sum up the Big Ten this way. Team that you're high on, team that you're low on, Brad, right now in the Big Ten heading into the season.
Believe it or not, a team that a long shot that I bet, USC 50-1. I thought that was for a team that's got some talent. I the second year of a defensive coordinator that did make some strides. I'm not wild about the quarterback, but boy, you give me USC, a team that's got top 20 talent in the country at 50-1. I did make that bet, and I bet them over 7.5 wins too, if you don't want to make the long shot bet. I think numbers say Illinois is going to be good. Me doing this for the last 15 years say they're going to be overpriced, and that's the team probably most likely not to live up to some expectations. I'm not a big Bielema guy, even though he won 10 games last year. That's a team that I think is going to eventually get overpriced in the market. That's all. Michigan State's a team that I have more questions than answers. My numbers love under on them, but I haven't made it to the window yet. That was one that I would have loved to have seen their spring game and didn't. So I actually think that there's a chance that they can be much improved.
Real quickly, Michigan, 8.5 is the win total. Juice varies. I've got a spreadsheet of just DraftKings and Circa, so obviously look around for different shops out there. But it is juice under. Just your feel for someone who covers recruiting as closely as you do, Bryce Underwood, he's the real deal?
Yeah, I don't know if he's the real deal this year, though. Okay. Boy, the physical attributes are there. Was able to watch your spring game. There was some inconsistency. I don't like their wide receivers. Do like their run game. Boy, they'll be physical at the point of attack. Love their defensive line, even though they're not as deep as they've been the last few years. But, man, their frontline talent there is really good. After the spring game, I bet under. But I didn't bet. It was an 8.5 that I got. I got a little different number. 8.5, I think, is a fair number for them. I mean, you look at the schedule. Yeah, I mean, they could be favored in 9 or 10 games. But I think the big swing game is going to be that Oklahoma game. Also, a tricky road trip to Nebraska. I think Michigan State on the road is always tricky. I know they've had Ohio State's number, but they'll be in a home underdog in that one. So, and they got to go to USC too. So, let's just say the number that I got on the win total, I'm pretty confident in the under there, but 8.5 seems like a reasonable, that's where I'd put it.
Well, you mentioned Oklahoma, and I want to get to them as we go to the SEC, Brad. And this is, I don't know if I want to say more polarizing teams, because look, Texas is still in that conference. There's, you know, Alabama, what's Kalen DeBoer going to do year two? But Oklahoma fascinates me because they did the thing that a lot of teams have done. And, you know, most notably, you look at a Miami, you go get Cam Ward from Washington State. So they said, all right, let's go get John Mateer. He did everything for Washington State. And I don't know if it's a contrarian in me or if I just said, I'll believe it when I see it. I think the kid's super talented, but he did it against a Mountain West schedule a year ago, and now he heads to the SEC. So Oklahoma, a massive year, as we all know, for Brent Venables. They go out, they get Ben Arbuckle, who's kind of the whiz kid, right? Offensive coordinator. They bring in John Mateer. Very, very busy in the portal. According to Bill Conley, and I don't know what your numbers say, toughest schedule in the country, Oklahoma this year, in a make or break season. So where are you on the Boomer Sooner this year?
Numbers, you know, early numbers, 6.5. Now it's, you know, the win total is way juiced to the over. Yep. Early numbers agreed with that move, although I didn't get to the window just because I hear you on that. I'm still skeptical whether Mateer's talent level translates to the SEC. I don't think it's a slam dunk. I also am not a big – I think Venables is a great defense coordinator. I don't think he's a great head coach. So that worries me. And then what you mentioned – what worries me most is that schedule. Yeah, it's right there. If it's not number one for me, it's right there with Florida for being the toughest schedule in the country this year. They've recruited all right, but they're still they consistently have a lot of roster turnover the last 3-4 years as far as having to rely on the portal heavily. And I just, man, when you play in week after week against that type of competition, I don't see it. So even though my number screamed over 6.5, I think it's relatively fair. I think it's a 6-6, 7-5 team. So for all the hoopla surrounding them, hey, they're going to make a run. I've seen some people put them in their top 10. I don't have them in my top 10. So I think it's much more like if you had to tell me is Venables back in 2026 or not, I would put the no as a slight favorite.
Well, a team that I'm pretty confident that you have in your top 10 is their arch rival, Texas. And look, I can talk about Julian Sain and Dante Moore and CJ Carr, but the biggest question in college football this year is Arch Manning and how good is this kid going to be? He's the betting favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. He's looked the part in, you know, in workouts. Look, maybe I got accused of trying to, you know, be a hot take artist when I put him number 7 in my top quarterbacks returning. I just don't know. Like, he could be number 1 and there's a likelihood that he is. Are you buying the Arch Manning hype this year right now? I mean, look, if he goes to Columbus week 1 and wins that game, he's what, 2-1 to win the Heisman Trophy? So maybe plus 750 at Circa is a good bet right now on Arch Manning. So we'll start with Arch before we go to the big picture of Texas. Where are you on Arch Manning?
I think he's going to be good. I don't know if he's, you know, they're going to be good enough to be, you know, win the Heisman. Although with that being said, it's all price dependent when it comes to me. And I have bet him to win the Heisman right there at Circa. Boy, they posted 12-1, that's where everybody else was in that 750-8-1 range, and I went ahead and made that bet, and not because I'm in love with, you know, him winning the Heisman, but I think you hit the derivative there of the line of thinking is if he does go out and has a big game right out of the gate against Ohio State and they win that game, you're exactly right. That 12-1 price, forget that being long gone. Your plus 750s are going to be long gone. Your 6-1s are going to be long gone. I mean, he'll be 4-1, or as like you mentioned, maybe even 2-1 to win the Heisman right after week one. So if you want to diversify the portfolio and think Texas beats Ohio State in week one, I think you have to have a Arch Manning ticket in your pocket. With that being said, boy, they lost a lot. Now that they went out in the portal and got a lot, they're spending as much money as anybody in college football. But I'm all about change one play. What's the narrative? Is it significantly different? Just one play. And I think there is the case there with Texas. If they don't convert 4th and 10 against Arizona State in the first overtime to 4th-2nd overtime, they lose that game, we would not be having a lot of this talk about Texas, in my opinion, because the talk would be that Sark maybe isn't the guy to get him over the top. And I still think – I still have those questions because I haven't been overwhelmed with him. I mean, he got dominated at the point of attack against Georgia, not one game, but twice. Ohio State obviously handled them, although the game was relatively close, and again could have lost to Arizona State. And they benefited not only last year but also this year is a relatively easy – I don't want to use the word easy, but I would say they got a favorable draw in the SEC for the first couple of years, and they got it again this year. But they got to go to Ohio State, have to go to Georgia. I got them an underdog in both those games. I think, you know, 10 – if you ask me what's the record, I got them 10-2 this year. We got 9.5 juice to the over big time. We got 10.5 juice to the under big time. That's where I'm at on Texas is 10-2, and yet I think they're going to get a lot of preseason number one love in the, you know, as among the regular national media.
The quotes have been flying out of Destin, and they've been pretty funny to hear from Sankey and all the coaches about, you know, where we're headed from expansion and all of that. And thankfully, we don't really have to focus on all of that here on the podcast as we talk about the here and now. That said, I did have to laugh a little bit when Kalen DeBoer is bitching about the schedule. I'm like, dude, you went to Vanderbilt with a stadium under construction. Yeah. You probably had 80% of the fans there, and you're complaining about losing a game as a 24-point favorite. So you don't lose that game, you're in the playoff. But I digress. They bring in Ryan Grubb to be reunited as his right-hand man, as his offensive coordinator. Questions at the quarterback position. Is it going to be Ty Simpson? Win total sits at 9.5 for Alabama. The non-conference schedule, you host Wisconsin. We didn't really talk about Wisconsin, but you know, that game, maybe not as daunting as maybe we once thought it would be. You open up at Florida State. It's going to be hot as all hell there in the middle of the afternoon, a 3:30 Eastern kickoff there. But still, you're, what, 11-point favorites in that game. You do play Georgia. You play Tennessee, of course, in that third Saturday of October. You go to South Carolina, LSU. It's a challenging schedule, no doubt. What do we make of Alabama this year? Are there more questions than answers, or do you think this is a solid season for Roll Tide?
No, I actually think there's more answers than questions. I was an early buyer of Alabama considerably over the win total to win the SEC week one. Now, all those have moved substantially. I'm not saying I'm a buyer right now at current market prices, although I'd still lean. I think the number goes up a little bit still at this point as far as week one game against Florida State. I like what they got coming back. I mean, if we were making a top 100 players in college football coming back, Alabama might have as much as anybody in the country, and nobody's really talking about that. Reason being is, you know, there's some questions at quarterback. I think they'll be okay there. I mean, the passing attack will be fine. I think they're loaded at wide receiver. Kalen DeBoer, I didn't think all of a sudden forgot how to coach. I like him having his right-hand man back with him, who was supposed to be there to begin with, and that was a move that was made after he was there a few weeks. So I think that hurt them a little bit. Obviously, it's going to take him a year, maybe more, to adjust the expectations being different, a little bit cultural difference there than what he's accustomed to. But, man, roster-wise, as good as any in the country, I think he's, you know, coming into last year, we all would have, you know, put Kalen DeBoer in the top five as far as coaches. So I like Alabama quite a bit this year. I all my bets that I made have been pro-Alabama.
Yeah, Bill Conley, by the way, ranks him number 2 in his post-spring SP Plus numbers there. So, you know, just worth noting, another piece of info just to throw out there. All right, let's get to Georgia real quickly before we kind of wrap up the SEC. Heavily juiced to the over for Georgia, minus 180 at Circa, minus 170, over 9.5 wins there at DraftKings. Gunnar Stockton is going to be the guy. You know, it's funny how quick things flip, right? For about 3 weeks, it was, Gunnar Stockton's so much better than Carson Beck. And then he doesn't play all that well against Notre Dame. And it's, well, you know, Georgia lost because they had the backup quarterback.
Yeah,
game.
Yeah.
but that's just the way it always plays out. But that being said, it's Kirby Smart. It's a loaded roster. And, you know, Georgia is always expected to be in the thick of it. So where are we on Georgia in this upcoming season?
Well, I mean, rosters is, again, I'm saying this about a lot of teams, but as good as anybody in the country. I'm not a huge Gunnar Stockton guy. So, I mean, you'd like to be a little bit more situated at the all-important position, but, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, when you look at how their recruiting rankings over the last 4 or 5 years, again, nobody pretty much is recruited better. Do they have that same defensive front? Like they had those two back-to-back national championship seasons? No. I do like what they have at linebacker. Wide receiver, they went out in the portal and got some guys. We'll see. They're going to have to be difference makers, including, you know, Zachariah Branch. If utilized correctly, could be a difference maker for them. Seen it in spots with USC the last couple of years, but, you know, not a lot of consistency there. Running back, I think they'll be all right. They lost a lot up front on both offense and defensive lines, and that's where usually Georgia makes their hay. I thought Notre Dame dominated them at the line of scrimmage last year, so that concerns me a little bit. But, boy, I mean, if I had to make a bet on the win total, I haven't yet. I'd certainly would bet over 9.5, even with the heavy juice. I don't see the team losing 3 games. In fact, I have Georgia favored in all 12 games this year.
All right. Same question to wrap it up, and there's much more meat on the bone here because we could have talked about, you know, Florida, Auburn. We didn't talk about LSU, Ole Miss. There's so much going on, Texas A&M. Team you're high on, team you're low on in the SEC?
Of the remaining teams, the team I'm low on is South Carolina. I mean, they lost 5 draft picks on the defense side of the ball alone. I think that was the differentiator on their team. Everyone's talking about Sellers being back at quarterback and, you know, the one guy that's back on defense, Stewart. But I think they're overlooking a lot of talent gone there. So that was one of my bigger win total bets I made was under. Auburn, I think, is a team that can be sneaky good. I'm not a big Hugh Freeze guy, but I think, you know, they've been close. They've just lost a bunch of close games. I love their wide receiver room. That's a team that can make a run. And another big game nobody's talking about, big swing game week 1.
Auburn, Baylor. Yeah,
at Baylor. Game again with a spread of less than a field goal that we'll get an idea for both. So Auburn's a team that I think, you know, Lee Corso's old saying, sneaking around the chicken coop a little bit, the old fox.
Yeah, Auburn's quarterback room fascinates me when you've got Jackson Dart, Ashton Daniels, and Deuce Knight, who's a 5-star prospect. So curious to see how Hugh Freeze maneuvers that room there. Real quickly, South Carolina is 7.5. Is that still playable for you?
I think it's still playable at 7.5. Okay. I got a much different number, but just to show you how much I liked it, even though it's moved to win, I still would bet under 7.5. I only am favoring five or six games this year.
We leave the best for last, and I say that a little tongue inserted into cheek, but also from a betting standpoint, it might be the best because no one in their right mind had Arizona State being the champion this time last year, and they win it. And right now, when you look at the odds, Brad, I mean, the shortest number out there is +550 at DraftKings for the conference winner. So this conference expects to be completely wide open again this year. And what was interesting to me is I just looked at, you know, DraftKings versus Circa win totals. And you could, if you wanted to sit yourself up with a middle opportunity, you could do it with a handful of teams in this conference. It's wildly fascinating. But you can't talk Big 12 without talking Coach Prime. And he loses his son. He loses the Heisman Trophy winner. They're busy in the portal like they always are. Week 1, I think that's a fascinating game. I wish I could get Georgia Tech at a cheaper price there in Boulder. 6.5 juice under at DraftKings. 6 juice over at Circa. Caden Salter comes in from Liberty after a disappointing season there in Lynchburg. What are we thinking of Coach Prime year 3 without Shador as his quarterback?
Yeah, big shocker here. I'm a seller of Coach Prime in Colorado. Maybe in the last couple of years. It hasn't worked out necessarily that well for me. But right back to it again this year. First bet I made, this offseason was in January. It was under their win total. How much I liked it, it was 7.5. It's 6.5. I'd still bet under. So I love that win total as far as Colorado. A lot more questions than answers, to say the least there. I mean, you lost, you know, at least on paper, a lot of people thought 2 top 10 talents. I know Shador dropped in the draft, but I mean, certainly a guy that set all kinds of records there at Colorado the last 2 years as far as passing the ball. There's going to be a downgrade there. You lose an all-world talent in Travis Hunter on both sides of the ball. again, another spring game I watched and I just didn't see it at all for Colorado. And by that, I mean, I think getting the bowl eligibility should be the goal this year. Obviously, no games, you know, I bet against them in week one. You said you wish you had a better number. I'm probably the reason why you don't have a better number there.
Damn you, Brad.
Yeah, one of the first bets I made there. So I'm just a seller. But again, you know, the Coach Prime's exceeded all expectations so far. I think they're going to struggle to exceed them this year.
You know, you look at the quarterbacks in the Big 12, Brad, and I think that, you know, certainly Leavitt will get some love, understandably so after last year at Arizona State. But look up and down that conference. I think it's a really good quarterback conference this year. I'm probably going to miss a couple, but you've got Leavitt at Arizona State, Retzlaff coming back at BYU, Sawyer Robertson, I think is wildly underrated. Maybe at some point we'll start to get the love. I thought that David Hale piece pointed out some pretty good numbers there on him. Rocco Becht is back. Jaden Daniels is back. Avery Johnson, who I thought was a slight disappointment last year. How about the numbers Josh Hoover has put up? I think in that blind resume, he put him up, David Hale versus Drew Aller. And outside of interceptions, they're right there. Maybe Josh Hoover slightly better. Morton back at Texas Tech. Devin Dampier, to me, I think is a ridiculous under the radar addition there for Utah. So when you look at the quarterbacks in this conference, Brad, who are the ones that you are kind of really looking to back at some point this year?
Well, the guy I backed on one of the first Heisman bets I made, and I've only made a couple just because I did miss watching my 60 spring games this year. I only was able to watch 12. And one of them was the Utah spring game. And boy, I knew Devin Dampier. You know, obviously athletic ability, ran for over 1,000 yards in New Mexico last year. He brings not only transfers to Utah, but along with him, the OC, he's got the same OC going with him. So there's some continuity there. But I thought he made 3-4 passes, and I posted a few of them on that spring game that showed me he could be, I'm not going to say an elite passer, but more than competent passer, even at the an upgraded competition. So I bet him to win the Heisman, even though, obviously he's a long shot for a reason. But I did make that bet, so I'm pretty high on him. You mentioned TCU's quarterback. I'm high enough on them that, TCU over 6.5, that's still holding value. I like TCU over 6.5 win total if you need one. So I'm pretty high on the Horned Frogs. I like them in week one against North Carolina, another big swing game as far as both teams' win totals. But those are a few that I like. There's a team that I don't like the quarterback. I think that's the biggest question, but man, they answered a lot through the portal at every other position. They're spending more money than anybody in the conference. You know, some sites have them as the number one transfer portal class, but I was a pretty big early buyer on Texas Tech to win the conference. It seems like everybody else fell in line there. Similar with Utah. Those are the two quote unquote longer shots that I bet a few months ago to win the conference, but you hit the nail on the head. It's as wide open as any. It's a fun conference to bet. Although I will say last year, I did not win money betting the Big 12 as far as the futures. I lost my ass on that conference.
Well, that's the beauty too of a better man. And so many people, you go to social media and it's all about check marks and money bags and all that bullshit. And it's like, look, you got to be honest with yourself, man. I think that's something that you and I at least, and there's plenty of others that you could be honest about. Utah and Texas Tech, plus 650 each right now at DraftKings, and that's the site I have up. Obviously, look around, see if we get a little bit better number. Would those be at those prices worth a look, or are those too short of shots right now?
Too short now. In fact, the other team that's sitting right around there at plus 650 that I would bet now at current would probably be Kansas State, the team nobody's talking about that I think maybe on paper has the most answers than questions. Particularly if Johnson can, make some progression, which he should in the second year as a starter. That's a team that in my power ratings I have as the best team on paper in the Big 12. Not significantly so, but that would be the one bet that I'd make right now at current.
All right, let's pepper you with a couple week zero, week one before we get out of here. Actually, before we do that, G5, Boise State, 9.5 wins. They obviously lose best player in school history, I think fair to say. Second in Heisman Trophy in Ashton Gentry. Maddox Mattson is coming back. I posed this question on Twitter, and shockingly, no one really responded because they're like, what the fuck are you talking about in the middle of May? But who is the best G5 quarterback? I think production-wise, Blake Horvath certainly has an argument there coming back from Navy. Where are you on Maddick Madsen heading into this year now that he doesn't have a absolute superstar behind him?
Yeah, I'm not wild about him. He's okay, but I mean, he's more game manager than anything. I will say kudos to everybody that attended the Boise State spring game, because I got a cut ups on almost every play. I was able to watch their spring game. There's still a lot of talent there, mm-hmm. Even at running back. I think they're going to be okay. I mean, I think I'm glad you mentioned Boise State. Why wouldn't you? But I think they're head and shoulders yet again, even without Genty, the all everything running back above not only everybody else in the Mountain West, but everybody else in the G5. I mean, I'd have them a touchdown better than everybody else. So I think they're the overwhelming favorite to get the playoff spot again. And even though they got a tough road trip to South Bend, other than that, I got them a significant favorite in every other game.
Right now, -125 to win the Mountain West. I haven't seen a market yet for them to make the college football playoff. But yeah, very, very interesting team, no doubt. Outside of Boise, who are some G5 teams just for people to keep on the radar?
Well, you mentioned Horvath and Navy returning, and it's not that I'm overly wild about Navy, but look at their schedule. There's a strong chance that they'll be undefeated when they play Notre Dame in November. I got them a favorite in, what is that, their first nine games. So not saying that they'll be 9-0, but I'd be surprised if they have two losses entering that game. So they're a team that, you look at the win total, that among not very highest. Team that I'm selling, we'll keep it local. Win total is pretty high, UNLV, at 8.5.
I think. Yeah.
Entirely different roster, and I know they've hit the portal and they got some big names, but a lot of big names coming out of high school, not necessarily big names as far as college production. So I'm more of a seller on the Rebels, and I think Dan Mullen again is a big name, and I don't mind that doing that kind of hire, but I don't think he's as far as putting the nose to the grindstone. I like Barry Odom better. I can tell you that. For at least I don't like people that like to maybe go out and about town too much. I think that might catch up to him there in Vegas.
All right, let's before we get out of here, we appreciate it, man. You've hung with me for almost an hour here, so let's do some quick shots here. Week 0, week 1. We had Matt Grill on from DraftKings Sportsbook last week. We went through a bunch of these games, just how they set the numbers. Week 0, we got 4 games. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, to be out on the island to catch my guy Timmy Chang against a very bizarre football team in Stanford. But I yelled at Matt Grill because I wanted 3, and we did not get it. But anything in week 0 of those 4 games jump out to you from a number standpoint?
Well, let me, because I'm not a guy that, is afraid to make a bet. I'll bet every game if I think it's off. I thought DraftKings did an amazing job. They were first to market as far as, putting all the games up. I didn't make that many bets, and not only week 0, but week 1 combined. So if there was one that I kind of like, somebody already bet it before I did, but I'm leaning towards Western Kentucky. Mm. They haven't turned much, but they got a very under-the-radar quarterback from Abilene Christian that I think will be have some success there in that offense. Sam Houston State, not wild about their new coach. To say the least, not wild about everything that they lost. They're off on an incredibly high season. I like Western Kentucky, week 0.
Yeah, that was one of the games that Matt let us know. I think it opened 7 and got popped out to 7.5, and it's where we sit there. All right, let's jump around a little bit. Week 1, you mentioned you got an early number on Georgia Tech. That is the Friday night game in Boulder. They're now a 3.5-point favorite, are the Rambling Wreck. Auburn-Baylor, this is a fun game. And Baylor, a home dog with a veteran quarterback, but you mentioned it. You're a little high on Auburn. So is Baylor a live dog there? It's short. It's only 2.5 right now. But is that a live dog situation on Friday night of week 1?
Well, I mean, certainly the number, it's short. I mean, my numbers have Auburn 1. So in order to bet Baylor, I need a 3 there. Well, I think we might get there, though. So, I mean, you're looking to bet Baylor. Just wait. I mean, there'll be SEC love there to want to bet Auburn. But I have not bet that one, but man, I think that's one of the more big swing games. And as far as getting a feel for a team's power rating, that's one of the most important games in week 1.
You mentioned you're in on TCU plus 1.5.
Playable. People looking, oh, you say you've got these. That's still playable as far as I'm concerned.
What about a game? And you know, you're going to be living in Ohio now, but I could trust it. You'll be up late. But, you know, we love betting the late night games. And this game has already been announced, 10:30. Oregon State is laying 1.5 against Cal. I'm very interested in this game. Malik Murphy, he heads out to Oregon State. So we'll see how that plays out. Who the heck knows what Cal is going to be this year? They lost a ton. They lose Jaden Ott late in the transfer portal window there. That's going to be a bizarre season for Cal. Late night game, Oregon State, Cal. Anything jump out to you in that one?
Lean Oregon State, haven't bet it yet. Probably certainly more questions than answers. Awesome game right away, though, as far as getting an idea of what either team can be this year. So I love games like that. I don't know if I'll stay up for the whole thing, but I will be watching. That will be one of the four or five games that I decide to watch a replay of. So, but I lean Oregon State. I'm a buyer of Oregon State. I bet over their win total. I bet Cal's win total under. So I don't want to talk too much more on that.
we'll leave it at that. All right, one more week one game. And you could just talk about just an interesting matchup, whatever it may be. You don't have to necessarily say you're laying it one way or the other. But I think Oregon State, Cal, to your point, I think that's going to be a really fun game to watch. And I love that it's the late night 10:30 Eastern window. Any other week one game, maybe outside of the obvious? You know, we know about Texas and Ohio State. Tennessee, Syracuse could be interesting. You're a little bit down on Syracuse in that spot. Clemson and LSU, Alabama, Florida State. Any game a little bit off the beaten path that you think will be an interesting spot week one?
Well, I'll give you, I mean, they're all interesting to me, but I'll give you a couple. One on Thursday night, we talked about Boise State being clearly the best.
USF?
Yeah, they get a chance to prove it right away because that's a tough, you know, tough place to play as far as across the country.
Also a weird time, right? 5 o'clock is going to be hot as crap. So that is, I think, an advantage for USF at the time. I think it's, 5:30 local kick time?
To get that national audience. So, we'll get an idea on both teams right away. I always say, I mean, I'll know right away on both teams. So not that I think there's value as far as making a bet, but I think that's in my opinion, the best G5 game by far. I'll give you another one that, speaking of G5, Tulane laying 7 against Northwestern. That's giving them some love. My numbers back it up that, you know, Tulane deserves to be that favorite, but obviously Northwestern coming off a tough season. Usually that's the type of role that they would be good in. So that's another at least intriguing game to me. Not that I think there's a lot of value, but man, from a power ratings aspect, I get an idea on both teams.
You could follow him on Twitter at BradPowers7. He's our guy. Always love picking his brain. Follow him there and see where he's going to be all season long. BradPowersSports.com is the website. Brad, appreciate it, man. Glad the trip and the move was successful, and no doubt we'll be talking to you throughout the summer.
Thanks for having me, man. It was a pleasure.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Thanks again to Brad Powers. Always love chopping it up with him, and I appreciate him as he's been making the move from Vegas to Ohio to give us time and be really one of his first extensive breakdowns this offseason. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. And yes, I'm sure plenty of you will let me know that we're big homers. But, you know, sometimes when you look around, you see a price like Notre Dame to win the national title at 30-1 at the Westgate Superbook, 17-1 at Circa, 12-1 at DraftKings. That is certainly worth noting there. All right, before we get out of here, I just want to hit on this. The college football playoff expansion has been hot and heavy, and I really hope that we get to the point. It seems inevitable we're getting to 16. Am I a fan of that? No. Do I have a decision in the matter? Of course not. But I really hope for the sport that all of us love and love to bet that we do not go to this 4-4-2-2-1-3 format, which would be 4 auto bids for the Big Ten, 4 auto bids for the SEC, 2 for the ACC, 2 for the Big 12, one for the G5, and then three at-larges. And no, it has nothing to do with me being a Notre Dame fan. I'm sure this would be just fine for Notre Dame, the way that they're rolling right now. But I think it's very simplistic, or overthinking it is the way that I should look at it. And hopefully it is not the case. And, you know, you look at Ross Dellinger, he put out this tweet earlier this week, and he said, Greg Sankey says certain formats, the 4-4-2-2-1, could actually, quote, cost the SEC qualifying teams. And he's right. If you do it that way, it would actually, by the numbers, cost the SEC teams. So hopefully we head to, because of the inevitability, we're going to 16. Five AQs, 11 at-larges. None of this nonsense of the 13 plays the 16, the 14 plays the 15, double buys. It just gets too complicated. 16, while I don't think it would be perfect, I'd prefer 12. 16 would be fine with me. Not that they're going to ask me, but I did laugh a little bit as the quotes are coming out from Destin, Florida this week. And, you know, this from our guy Lane Kiffin, he doesn't seem to want the AQs. He said, he said there's still flaws in every system. The best system should be 16, and it should be the 16 best. Doesn't seem like he is a big believer in the auto bid format there, which I'd be totally fine with. We will have auto bids. We will have five auto bids, but five auto bids and 11 AQs. If you look back to last year, then Alabama gets in, Ole Miss gets in, South Carolina, I don't know if they would have got in, but it does feel like it's a massive overreaction, which is what we do, to what we saw last year. And we've already seen that rectified. And I know, who's it, Jeremiah Dickey, the AD of Boise State, has already come out and said that they should call it the Boise State rule, with the change there, who was none too pleased because of the change in the format. Once again, I still am wondering how all of these conferences came to the agreement on this. One conference could have stepped in and said, no, we're not doing this, and it would have stayed that way. I'm sure there was some wink, wink, nod, nods out there. But I'll wrap on this. And we talked Alabama, and it seemed like Brad was pro-Alabama. And I'm not anti-Alabama. But man, oh man, Kalen DeBoer, year one in that conference, hashtag it just means more, already doing it. Quote, you wonder what would have happened if other people would have played our schedule, end quote. You do realize you lost to Vanderbilt. And I know our guy Diego, underdog god, Diego Pavia, you were a 23-point favorite at Vanderbilt. And I understand that a place like Oklahoma, where you also lost as a 14-point favorite, is a pretty daunting environment. Vanderbilt ain't that. They had construction going on. You probably had 70% of that crowd. It was a massive letdown spot. We talked about it on this podcast. I think both Matt and I were in on Vanderbilt, plus the points in that game, if I remember correctly, off the Georgia win. But you lost as a 23-point favorite. And that's what the playoff allowed you to do, is to have a mulligan. I mean, look at Notre Dame, lost to Northern Illinois. They could not lose another game. They did not lose another game. Miami lost to Georgia Tech. They would have got in, but they decided to lose to Syracuse in the final week of the season. Ole Miss lost to Kentucky, who won zero games in the conference outside of that win over Ole Miss. And all Ole Miss had to do in the second to last week of the regular season was to beat Florida as a 13-point favorite. They didn't do it. The current format allows you a mulligan. In some cases, mulligans. But you can't lose multiple bad games. And I think that's fine. So if you're Ole Miss, don't lose to Kentucky and Florida. If you're Alabama, don't lose to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma as a double-digit favorite in both of those. Yes, Ole Miss and Alabama, coincidentally enough, lost the game following the win over Georgia. Alabama lost to Vanderbilt and Ole Miss lost to Florida, Ole Miss lost to Florida off of the win over Georgia. But I had to chuckle a little bit. Yeah. I mean, look, did Indiana have a pretty favorable schedule? Absolutely. They went 11-1. And did they get their doors blown off? It was 27-3 until Indiana did some nice window dressing there at the end of the game. But, you know, let's not pretend. How did Tennessee fare on the road at Ohio State in the tournament? Texas, as Brad Powers mentioned, was in double overtime against Arizona State in the tournament. And Georgia lost to Notre Dame, the SEC champ. So I'm not here talking shit about the SEC. I think it is the best conference from top to bottom, year in and year out, most talent out there, even though the top part of the Big Ten is very comparable. But Kalen DeBoer, come on, dude. Don't lose to Vanderbilt on the road as a 23-point favorite. Don't lose to Oklahoma on the road as a 14-point favorite. Win one of those games, you're in the playoff. And also, by the way, if SMU gets blown out by Clemson, Alabama probably gets in the field of 12. And are we doing this whole thing? Probably still, but I thought it was fun to hear that from Kalen DeBoer, who is already leaning hard into the SEC world out there. Hey, just a reminder, depending on when you listen to this podcast, the college baseball bracket is out and we've got awesome handicappers over at VSiN, Aaron Moore and Matt Grissom. Matt Grissom joined my show, the VSiN Weekend Morning Line, on Saturday and Sunday. Gave us winners on both Saturday and Sunday. He's at Grissom on X. He does an amazing job. So if you're looking to get in to the college baseball, dip your toe in a little bit there with bets. I think VSiN, actually I know VSiN, we announced it in Bill Ady's newsletter there. We'll be in Omaha. How about that? Stormy and JVT will be there with Money Moves, and Mitch and Paul will be there as well with Follow the Money. So we will be boots on the ground there in Omaha. But we've got great content out there for the college baseball tournament. So check it out over at vsin.com. And I believe it is a free guide to all of the college baseball content we have out there. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks again to Brad Powers. We'll be back later this week. David Hale from ESPN talking quarterbacks heading into the 2025 season. As always, please give us a rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you run into a stranger during the summer months, just remind them the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast is the podcast for them. I'm Tim Murray. Talk to you later this week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.